You're listening to the Asian Action Cast, the best and worst of Hong Kong and Asian action cinema. The podcast contains coarse language and adult themes.
Previously on the Asian Action Cast.
So, spoiler, number two is Dean Shek in it, so...
Oh, for real?
Watch out.
Dean Shek's in
this. I think he's credited higher than Jamie Foxx, so watch out.
Really?
Whoa.
Next week, we're going to watch it, yeah?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, all right.
We now return to the Asian Action Cast.
Hong Kong action mavericks John Woo and Choi Hark take the heroic bloodshed genre to the next level and beyond in a violent symphony of destruction that is often imitated but never bettered. Chow Yun Fat, Leslie Cheung, and T-Long. A better tomorrow, too.
This fucking fried rice!
When you take the pebble from my hand, it will be time for you to leave.
Ninja, the tea party's over!
Good evening and welcome to another episode of the Asian Action Cast. My name is Sam. We do have a semi-full table. I'll go around. Hello, Scott.
Hello.
Hello, Rachel.
Hello.
Hello, Mikey.
Hello.
Hello, Chris. Welcome back, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you. I am back.
And hello, Nathan's not here. Apologies from Nathan. He is not well. He got international sickness. Which is what we're calling anything that you don't contract in Australia. It's international sickness. So get well, Nathan. Enjoy this episode without you. And we're thinking about you.
Press F to pay respects.
And send to our Patreon.
And you should have heard what Michael was saying about you earlier.
All right. So here on the Asian Action Cast, where we watch... Jesus Christ, I've forgotten my... We watch...
You're out of practice, Sam.
I know. I haven't said it in a while, huh? We watch, review, recap, revamp the best and worst of Hong Kong and Asian action cinema. We do have a general rule, which is the films that we watch has to be produced by an Asian country or an Asian production company. And it spans all over the globe. I mean, except like the West.
You see,
just Asia.
Hong Kong films are generally our bread and butter here, but we've sort of... Japanese films. We've done one couple from India. We've breached out. We watched one from the Philippines. We haven't reviewed that one yet. Maybe later in the year.
Thailand.
South Korea. Yeah. So
Malaysia.
Yep. Malaysia. Yeah.
Because I think Western films probably get enough exposure as it is. And there's enough of these old school Hong Kong action films and new school Hong Kong inspired Asian action films that are worth our time and everybody else's time to watch them. So, without further ado, the movie that we did tonight is Shock Horror, a sequel to a film that we've already done last episode.
The first time we've done a sequel in a calendar year, and the first time we've done a sequel back-to-back.
Chronologically.
Now, earlier in the Asian Action Cast, by, say, pre-COVID times, Christian and I were joking because we did the first part of Attack on Titan. We'd be like, and you missed that one. Like, let's watch the second one with Sam here and see what he gets from it, because I think it sort of carries the story on. Whereas this one... You get a bit of an explanation, and it's kind of its own film.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yes. What film was it, Scott?
A Better Tomorrow 2.
A Better Tomorrow 2. Is this share the same international title as A Better Tomorrow 1?
The translation is True Colors of a Hero.
It's just literally number two on the end, tacked on the end. There's no subtitle or anything.
Right. True Colors of a Hero 2 or A Better Tomorrow 2.
Two Colors of a Hero would have worked as well.
Two Colors of a Hero or... Colors of a two hero.
There's too many heroes.
Too many puns.
There are too many. It does increase the number of heroes, doesn't it? It does. Yeah.
Is it exponentially? Yeah. Is it squared?
I don't know what exponential means, but there's more than there were. Is that exponential?
It's explanational.
Explanational. So this is
do math.
Yeah, I know. I'm Asian too. I should know this. That's why I watch Hong Kong and Asian action films.
Everybody clap.
Maths.
Just jokes.
So, yes, usually when we start off, we do a pitch for people who haven't seen the film, may not be familiar with John. I mean, seriously, who's not familiar with John Woo? But in case you aren't, how would you pitch this film, Chris?
Everybody but the main... everybody but the main characters is bulletproof. you can get shot 15 times and still be alive. It's amazing. And you really get upset when someone doesn't want to eat your fried rice. And honestly, grenades are more powerful than they should be.
That's probably true in real life too. Mikey?
Angry restaurateur.
Angry restaurateur.
Takes offense to Gordon Ramsay criticism of his rice.
That's
and
intense.
Let the violence ensue.
That's intense. Rachel?
Dean Shek gives a performance of his life, but is still out-acted by Leslie Cheung, apparently.
Ooh! Wait, hang on. When you say ooh, apparently, according to who?
Hong Kong Film Awards,
really?
Maybe. In terms of nominations, I don't think he won. But
so, Dean Shek...
I don't think he was nominated.
Was not nominated, but Leslie Cheung apparently was. I don't know, though. That phone booth scene was pretty heart-wrenching.
Yeah, because best actor is Leslie Cheung's nomination.
Yeah, all right. He didn't even eat an orange.
And then we also had best action choreography for Ching Siu Tong. So
Ching Siu Tong did the shooting, the fight, the like action choreography with the shooting. I assume.
I guess
the guns.
So.
Okay. Oh well, yeah, it's a good film.
Yeah,
there's action in it.
There's a lot of it.
Yeah, Scott, how would you sell this?
Cigarettes and sweat.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. I would sell this as we had to find a way to get Chow Yun-fat back, even though he died in the first one. Spoilers. So come watch this one because he's in it too.
I would probably, if I, with a quick think about it, like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest meets Rambo.
I never saw One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Is that a Dolph Lundgren film?
He's going for the nurses in The Crazy Place.
The Crazy Place?
Yes, in the sanatorium. Okay.
What would you say, Muriel's Wedding versus Rambo?
What? You're terrible. Yes. A Better Tomorrow 2. Now, this is an action film. This is more action, I think, than A Better Tomorrow 1.
Is it time for the new segment?
It is time for the new segment. So that the viewers and the listeners who might be thinking, oh, I'm in for an Asian action film, we now have a segment which is to give you an idea roughly on what we think the percentage of action is. Now, what I want to say, though, is my view on action is not necessarily somebody getting punched, kicked, shot, or all the time. Action also includes tension and drama. Well, not drama, but like shit where you're like, oh, some bad shit's going to go down. So I'm going to sit here and say maybe 65% action in this film, where somebody's either getting shot, blown up, ratcheted, jerked around, that kind of stuff.
Well, at the end, people get stabbed with swords, blown up with grenades, shot, punched, kicked. So everything except for wuxia is in this film, really. There's no karate or, you know, kung fu.
Heroic like bloodshed. So how did you feel? It doesn't have to be like exact percentage, but how do you feel? How much action was in this film?
I think 50 to 60. That's pretty accurate.
50 to 60, yeah.
Like the last 20 minutes is pretty good.
It's fireworks factory. Yeah. Rachel?
Yeah, pretty much the same, I guess.
Ooh, more than 50.
Yeah, I'll go with 50%.
50%.
Yeah, I'm going to go with 50 as well. There's a little bit of time setting up because there's actually two consecutive stories running against each other until the last 20 minutes.
And that seems a bit more complicated than the first film, right? Like they've actually got a couple of different narratives that are kind of dovetailing, hello John Woo, into each other through this film.
Like the first half of this movie is when you're trying to put a blanket into a doona cover, and then the last half, then you flap it and it's all ready to go.
That feels so good. That feels so good, man. And you clip it up and then freeze frame.
And you go, whoop, and you flap it.
Yes. Do we have any trivia for this film? I read some. Did you have any special behind the scenes trivia, Rachel? You always have some of these. Or scandals with Leslie Cheung at the time, you know, romantic interactions.
No.
From what I've read, this film was sort of created a divide between Chui Hark and John Woo. Chui Hark believed that the movie should have focused a bit more on Dean Shek, and John Woo was like, no. So that may...
I find that hard to believe, though. It's already like, you know, how much more Dean Shek can you get?
Mm. I was reading there was an argument between John and Sui in regards to the length of the film. So Sui wanted it closer to the 120 for 8 showings at a cinema, and John Woo didn't want to compromise in terms of what he wanted in the movie, and his cut was closer to an hour and 63 minutes.
Jesus.
So they were going backwards and forwards, and then Sui apparently, according to the story, would secretly cut bits out of the movie, and John Woo would later come in and secretly add them back in until they got into a fight. And apparently, the compromise was that they sent it out to a separate editor for him, for this separate editor to edit the film for them. And what you get back is the movie that got edited by them, which John Woo hated so much that he disowned the movie at the time and said the only bit that is mine is the final fight scene. The rest of it's not. So, yeah.
I looked and I couldn't find a copy of the director's cut, the John Woo director's cut.
Apparently, yeah, the only ones that I ever saw the original John Woo cut was at the executives when he showed it to them before they started doing the other edits.
That's a shame. Too many cooks, man. Spoil the broth.
Well, I think we've got to bring up the fact that there's a scene where Chow Yun Fat throws a grenade, turns his back to it, and it goes off, and it was actually a bit more powerful than he was told. And the look on his face was, because I thought it was just, is this acting? What's going on? It's actually his legitimate response to what happened. So
being exploded.
Yeah.
So the funny thing is, though, you could buy that with his character, because his character was kind of like that anyway.
Because I've read some reviews of this, and they say this one's a bit more self-aware and or sort of a bit less serious. And it's like, oh, maybe they're just having a bit more fun. But maybe that was Christian's right. Maybe it's like he wasn't expecting to go, oh, fuck, that was loud, you know.
Maybe that's why they made his bits goofy, because they were like, oh, no, we have to add this in now.
Because, like, the Chow Yun Fat I'm most familiar with is very straight-laced, like God of Gamblers and what's the name? The one with where he kicks a birdcage and it's got guns in it.
The Killers.
Killers.
Yeah, The Killers was, yeah, very
and he's straight. Hell serious, like, you know, shotgun on a string and all that other. This one is just...
You know what? I think it's just one of those stupid things where they're trying to make a point, because they've brought him back from the dead by, oh, he's got a twin brother in America.
That old chestnut.
And for him to be the twin, he acts slightly different to the other one. So he's more serious in the first one, and now he's a bit more goofy in this one because he's the twin. He's not really Mark. He's Ken.
All right, what are the differences? Can we name some differences? Name some differences between Ken and Mark Gore from The Better Tomorrow 2.
The thumbs up.
The Better Tomorrow 1. Thumbs up, yeah.
Memes all over the place.
Timberlands. This guy wears Timberlands.
He lives in New York. I mean, we watched the first one. If you go back and listen to the podcast we did on the first movie, we were all remarking that although we associate Chow Yun Fat and John Woo, and maybe if you haven't seen this movie before, you're like, oh, it's going to be Chow Yun Fat all the way. Tai Lung was the main character in that movie.
In the first film, yeah.
But Chow Yun Fat
was... The brother thing was the main plot.
Yeah, and really. Chow Yun Fat was a...
Side character.
Scene stealer.
Scene stealer.
Oh, well, that too.
And this movie is same. Like, Chow is a big part of this movie, but he's not the main character.
No, Dean Shek is the main character.
So this movie shares a lot of the cast of the first one. But like Sam said, Dean Shek is in this with a excellent performance, because... If you go back and listen again to our early episodes, Nathan has a burning hatred for Dean Shek and sort of Jim Carrey.
It's pretty hard to stomach most movies.
He's a bit much.
There's something else that we all pointed out in this movie that we have to talk about as well, which is Dean Shek's hair.
It's fabulous.
It's fabulous in this movie. But I like to call this one the Jackie cut, because it looks like Jackie circa 1980 kind of hairstyle.
It's very
except
full.
Except he's got frosted tips. Yeah.
It's very full. It's stylish.
It goes from kind of golden to grey pretty quickly though, right?
Yeah.
Poor now for Dean Shek.
We have some new cast members though. We have Xing Fui On, who is the badass assassin. Ung Min Tat's in this, and also Regina Kent as Peggy, and Mike Abbott as assassin. And also Lewis Roth as this fucking fried rice.
That's pretty funny. That's terrible dubbing as well. Terrible dubbing. How are we going? Any more trivia?
I got nothing. It came out in 1987. Obviously, very late 1987. It says December 1987. So
that's crazy that they could release A Better Tomorrow 1, see how crazy it was received, and then go, shit, we're going to make another one right now.
Joseph Koo does the music as well. I think a lot of it is left over from the last movie, and I only really kind of heard that towards the end, and it's like, oh, that's that cool synthy music he does.
They didn't have that theme song.
That one?
They didn't. I just realized that.
But Leslie Cheung does sing in this.
Yes, he does.
So you could almost call this a Christmas movie before Die Hard.
Is it set in Christmas?
I can't tell. Not really, but the release date was just before Christmas.
It's 17th
of December.
Okay.
If you want to explode some things and stay warm this Christmas,
there's a shooting star, right?
Shooting star.
I don't know. I'm just sort of thinking about what we said earlier, like how Chow Yun Fat was a scene stealer. Do you think maybe if you're going to hire the guy who's well known for holding guns in a film like this, like, do they hire him to get it propped up, or do you think they hired him because...
No. Get put in proper place. This is like one of his first movies where he's doing the shooting with the guns.
But he's in the original one.
He's in the first one, and then they immediately made the second one. What I mean is, like, in these movies, the series, what we're saying is this is one of the first big movies that he's doing, and he's a scene stealer.
Yeah, we were talking
about... Hence why, after this, he makes, like, a bunch of movies where he's
we were talking the main about it, though, star. Because he had also done some TV stuff and...
No guns, though.
No guns.
No, just dramatic mugging, yeah. Probably, and yeah. Crying, and et cetera.
Although he does have the turn to the side.
He looks stylish. He's very suave.
The suave.
If we ever do a video podcast, Mike, we're getting you doing the turn to the side for our listeners here.
Mm-mm. So this film starts with a sweaty start, just like the first one did.
Just like the first one.
Yeah. Is it the same guy? Is it Tai Lung that's sweating? He's pretty sweaty.
Can't remember.
He's in jail, I think. And he's
yes,
sweating.
You're right. Sorry.
And he's remembering everything, recap. Previously, on A Better Tomorrow.
He's getting a revamp of the first movie.
Yeah, he was. Because they were doing like a... I guess that's a cheap way to insert free action from the first film, right? All of the money shots, people getting shot. So, Tai Lung is sweating away, same as he did in the first film, except you don't see his tattoos this time. And he's remembering all the events. So, it sets up that Chow Yun-Fat's obviously passed away. I say that as if he died peacefully, but he didn't. He died terribly violently, being shot in the head, actually. At the end of the first film.
So, I wonder hypothetically whether this would be something that the director would agree to, having such a very blatant recap at the beginning.
Previously, yeah, on A Better Tomorrow.
Yeah, artistically, it's kind of jarring, but
yeah,
I can see why plot-wise, because Mark Gore died at the first one.
Well, it would have been written in the script, so they would have gone... Whoever wrote the script would have had to give it to a director first, and they would have
been
like...
It could have been the Choi Hak cut.
The Choi Hak cut. I mean, Choi Hak is not like the guy is not a great director. He gave us fucking, you know, Once Upon a Time in China. So he knows like a good film, but obviously his and John Woo's styles must just be very different.
I just can't think of many films that have such heavy handed like recap of maybe Once Upon a Time in China or something like that. But yeah.
Also, Choi Hak and John Woo do not star in this movie, unlike the first one. Where John Woo was gliding.
He was gliding.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And Choi Hak was a cello judge.
Yeah,
thank God for that.
I think maybe it was a budget issue, maybe. That's why John Woo had that such a big role in that first one.
We can't afford another police inspector.
I think that's the reason, but not entirely sure.
Yeah, all right. What happens next, Mike?
Have you actually started on the story?
Yeah. Yeah, he's sweating in prison. Yeah.
He basically, the chief of police pulls him out of his cell and says, look, we want you to go undercover. And he's like, no, I'm not doing it. And then he says, but your little brother's doing it. And he says, all right, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, because this cop seems like a bit of a like a glory hog, right? Like, he doesn't seem like an upfront cop. He just wants a bit of glory.
He's just told him that, like, we've taken everybody down. The only one left is
Dean Sheck.
His lung's his name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he says, well, he needs to be taken down, and he sees who he is, and he's like, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, because the guy's been retired for 10 years, he says.
Yeah, so, you know, he's like, no, he's not, he's dirty. He's like, no, he's not, I believe him. And then he goes back to his cell, and then they come out and say, look, we've got your kid brother, whose name is Kit, doing this. And he goes, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm coming out of retirement. I'm getting a band back together.
Leslie Cheung's Kit.
You forgot the other flashback that they added in where Kit has a wife and she's looking at baby books and stuff.
Yeah, I totally missed that.
She's pregnant.
Totally missed that she was pregnant. That kind of sets it up though, right? Kit's got a lot to lose.
He does.
He's married to the badge.
Just like the first movie.
Yeah, that's right. But now he's got an actual kid, so.
And then they go flash to Lung at the dance hall with his daughter, Peggy, who he's an ex-dancer who came there 10 years ago and started the whole thing. Which I don't know why that stuck with me, but it did.
Can't you sit still?
And then, like, other baddies come in and want to shake his hand, but he's like, no, I'm not shaking your hand. Not doing
snub.
This.
Snub.
Yeah, he's full on snubbing this guy.
Boring snub, you say.
And he's trying to stay clean, though. Is
who
that the point?
Who would have known?
Is that what we think? That he doesn't want to shake the hands because he doesn't want to affiliate with criminals anymore?
Kit comes in and is basically schmoozing with his daughter. So,
with a great haircut. Leslie Cheung looks very good in this.
See, now you think he's good looking.
Well, yeah, because the haircut. Jesus, if I had that haircut, my mum would have been like, yeah.
And this is the only time you never see him not in boat shoes, so.
Yeah, that's right. Or a tweed jacket.
Tweed jacket. And then they have a meeting with some bad people, and he says, I want your company. And he's going, fuck no.
Ingman Tat, is that who the other bad guy is? Competing, like, yeah.
Another wacky guy doing a serious turn here.
He's very good, though. He looks like a real prick.
It seems to me like everyone in this movie is someone who was serious and turned wacky.
Kind of.
Yeah, I guess. Because, yeah, Dean Shek's comedy doing serious, Ingman Tat.
He was originally a serious actor, but then Stephen Chow corrupted him.
Oh, okay. So, this is actually him being consistent.
Because I don't know if they've been together on TVB yet, in a TV show as comedians, but...
Yeah, okay.
Originally a serious actor. Hard to believe.
He looks like a villain in this film. Yeah.
Speaking of looking like villains, we have to point out that Tai Lung's hair is much better in this film. Since he's been in jail, he's learned to style his hair.
Yeah, you're
in the first movie.
I don't know what I mean by better.
He had a slick back balding mullet.
Yeah, his hair seemed to have regrown. Maybe he could afford like hair regrowth.
I don't know, hair plugs then.
Advanced hair, Greg Matthews.
Or maybe he grew that mullet longer so it looks like there's more.
I don't know, comb overs are underrated sometimes.
I don't think he could do a comb over.
Hasn't got any enough. Yeah.
No, I don't know. No, I don't think it's like gone enough. I don't know. But I certainly didn't focus on his hair in this one as much as I did in the first one. Because you're right, like his hair is... And maybe because his eyes were more expressive in this. He's always like, oh, I'm lost.
Maybe it's because Leslie Cheung is meant to be his brother. And Leslie Cheung looks like he's 12. And Tai Lung's like he's 80.
Yeah, his dad was very...
I think Tai Lung always... Styling, like, he's always wearing suits with these giant freaking shoulder pads. I know it was sort of the style around that time. But it looks like he's wearing a freaking zoot suit.
It was the style at the time.
I always feel like Tai Lung's like acting like his best Shaw Brothers acting, like big wide eyes of joy and happiness, or like anguished eyes of pain and like hurt. Yeah.
But this whole film was
shifty.
This whole film was dramatic like that, right? Like it was overtly dramatic like that. And I, you know, we joked about it, but I also picked it up as just like every time you saw people talking with each other, they were like 3 inches away from each other's faces. And partly for the drama, but also I think it was to fit them both into frame because he just had them so freaking close
cheap
up.
Cheap and quick.
Yeah. I honestly think they only had one microphone and they had put it on somebody's chest. They pinned it to him and said, like, here we go. Like,
Brim's up here.
Can I afford one?
Listeners, if you go back and listen to all the times Michael said shifty eyes, send us an email and I'll send you a t-shirt. I love it.
I've forgotten where we're up to. Oh, this is the
boring. Anyway, so they go, they have another meeting and they frame him basically because his assistant is actually trying to usurp him. He doesn't know it yet. But
much like Shek's the first movie.
Yeah, Dean Shek's assistant. Yeah, well, actually, yeah, recurring theme. Don't trust your second in command. Yeah.
So this, we call him the white gloved assassin. He shoots people while Lung's got a gun. He took off the assistant who was trying to shoot or threaten the other bad guy.
Well, this was a bit of a bait and switch because I didn't see it coming, and maybe that's because I'm naive, but it was Ingman Tat's character.
Oops, they're not so big.
The assassin belonged to Ingman Tat's character, and Ingman Tat is the one that says, oh, if I give you the signal, you shoot When I drop the cigarette, you shoot Dean Shek. And then they have a kerfuffle where Dean Shek and his second in command are like trying to get Ingman Tat to back the fuck down, and the assassin sees the cigarette fly, and instead of shooting Dean Shek, he shoots Ingman Tat because he's under the control of someone else. Spoilers, it's the second in command. But you don't know that yet. You don't know that yet.
And then there's a few more precise shots fired by the assassin, and Lung has to run because he's...
Clap.
So he gets on a boat and goes to New York. Why New York? He's got
friends there.
So he's got a twin brother there.
No, Chow Yun-Fat's got a twin brother there.
So does Lung.
What, Lung's got a twin brother there? I didn't get that.
Sam wasn't a twin, but he was just his buddy.
Oh, was his buddy who looks just
the
like
priest?
Him. He looks very similar, yes.
The priest.
So they look. So he's got a best friend or a brother or some nonsense who is in a church.
They're all brothers.
They're all brothers. They're all everyone's
from
related.
A different mother, yeah.
And so they look exactly alike, have the same hairstyle, and then he goes, "Oh, I'm home, yay!" And then it switches to the greatest scene in cinematic history.
Yeah, one of. I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
This is one of two scenes this movie is, I guess, known for outside of people that haven't seen the movie, like on social media or on YouTube. There's the thumbs up, the reaction gif.
Which, Chow Yun-fat's, his meme.
And we're saying scene stealing.
Scene stealer. And the, this fucking fried rice.
Can we go back a little bit just to set it up? Tyler goes and sees an artist who's created like a homage.
It's like a shrine to fucking
Mark to Chow's character from the last.
He's got the storyboards movie. From the first movie and just blown them up.
It does. It actually
and Mark's
like,
bullet riddled like jacket.
It's actually really quite
pretty cool.
Pretty cool. Yeah, I'd love to have like a shot of it on my wall or something.
Mm.
And it's at this point that we find out that Mark had a twin brother called Ken. And Ken's in America, and that's the point where Tyler calls Chow at the restaurant where Chow works. Enter restaurant.
And Four C's Chinese restaurant.
In a bit of foreshadowing, he says, customers complaining about too much salt in the fried rice, which sets up this fucking fried rice.
Don't go to a Chinese restaurant and complain about the salt, motherfucker.
You know what you're getting into.
So these two English Guidos are sitting there, and
Lewis Roth is the main guy here.
Lewis Roth. And it's a busy, bustling Chinese restaurant. And the thing is, before this gang that are trying to be, they're cutting into Chow Young's table. They all got knives. One's got a gun. And Chow just goes up to him and says, what the hell are you guys doing? He's like, we want to be your gang. We want to be. And he's like, no, shut up. You're all stupid. And then this guy, just in the middle, one of the Guido guys, just picks his plate of fried rice and just throws it across the room while saying,
the fucking fried rice.
But this is, to be fair, this is his second plate of fried rice. The first plate was too salty. This new one that's come out, he's then just ditched this as well.
Well, Three Bears logic says the third bowl of fried rice is just right.
Just right. That's great.
Don't you read fairy tales?
Just the right amount of MSG.
So he throws it across the room at people and goes, this fucking fried rice. And people run, and then the gang members trying to prove themselves to Ken run out and try to do something, and then Chow comes out, and then he has this showdown with this Guido guy.
Terribly dubbed, like, English for him talking to. I found it really hard to understand what they're living.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a weird mixing thing or something there. I found even when they're yelling, it's like, I can't really hear what they're saying.
Yeah.
I get the vibe, what they're saying, but I can't hear
what Chow speaking or the...
Both. Probably because they had a mouthful of food as well.
Yeah, that's right. Chow picks up the rice from the floor and, you know, puts it on the plate.
What did you say, man? He said, when you're talking to a Chinese person, rice is like our family. Why are you fucking with my family?
Yeah, because the guy's threatening to, like, bomb the restaurant, right?
Yeah.
And so Chow is, he does a very good impassioned speech about respecting the rice and then telling the guy that he has to apologize to the rice, which... I mean, at the time, right? Like, you talk about all these Asian role models to kind of empower, you know, people like Bruce Lee and whatever. And then you got this guy, Chow Yun-fat, is not backing down to this fucking mobster, and he's telling him to apologize to the rice. I mean, wow, what a guy you can get behind, right?
This, I got to admit, is one of the most... You can't turn... This is one of those scenes where you can't turn away from it. You have to watch,
like,
to see what happens.
Crash.
It is. It really is.
Because he's got rice all over his face.
Yeah. In his mouth, and he's just, and you just want to know what he wants to say, because you just want him to say something really cool. But then he goes back from being really cool to drones on a little bit about something, but then goes back to being crazy eyed intensity, you know, like just, and it ends up with him. One of the guys gets up and pulls a gun, and then he takes the gun off him, shoots him in the leg, and puts the gun right to the guy's head. A cop walks in, just this random black cop walks in, pulls his gun. And he says, I'm not going to put my gun down until he eats the rice. And the cop sort of looks at him and goes, you got to eat the rice.
Yeah, you're pretty serious. It's pretty serious.
You say, what you're saying is you wanted a one liner like, rice to meet you or something like that. And then you start shooting. Is that what you wanted?
Something like that. Yeah, yeah. But it's
I bet you're gluten intolerant.
Like, it goes on. And you're sort of like, when it's almost gets to the point where it's where there's a fireworks factory, but then...
It's tense.
It pulls it back with some really cool dialogue, which is, you're, yeah, so the roller coaster here is going really well.
One thing that we didn't establish, well, it's established in the film, but we didn't mention in the podcast, is that the painter, the artist who painted Mark, kind of explains that, because he's got a picture of Mark and Ken as kids, and explains that Ken is the crazier of the two brothers. Like, he's known as the loose cannon, as like King of Diamond Hill or whatever.
They had to send him to New York. He's too fucking out of control for Hong Kong.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And I actually heard in the third film there's a picture of three boys. And they just keep going like a school of boys.
It's like a fold on the photograph.
They fold it back and it's just, it's young Cynthia Rothrock or something.
And there's the mad fold out.
Well, that was the trip. Yeah.
That's why the pages are stuck together. But it is Chow Yun Fat's in the third one, right?
Yeah, but that's supposed to be a prequel, right?
Oh, it is a prequel. I haven't seen it. Oh,
okay. I think it's set in 1976.
Oh, no shit. I guess what we'll watch it next time.
Oh. Coolio. We can decide who's the better director.
Who's the director for that one?
Choi Hark.
Oh!
I think John Woo is credited as producer, but maybe that's like his leftover stuff from the last one.
I stole your character. So I have to credit everything.
You? I think.
Ooh. All right. Sorry to derail it there. So this intense rice scene.
And then basically the guy eats a bit of rice, then he gives his gun to the cop, and then
That's it.
Like it's kind of anticlimactic in one way.
I don't know. That eating rice by the gangster is pretty intense.
He spits it out anyway. He's like, fuck this rice.
It's super intense. It does establish though that Chow is a good guy. He looks after his crew at the restaurant, right? He's fucking crazy.
Yes.
As you could see. And he's again, a scene stealer. Like, he's just a really charismatic kind of individual. Because he really doesn't have anything to do with the story yet. This is actually Lung's story. This is Dean Sheck's story, who's now in New York. And he's hanging out with his buddy, the priest, who was also a war buddy?
Ex-gangster?
Gangster, because of the tats and stuff.
Yeah, very fake-looking tats.
Yeah. He's got
they did look like there's rub on guys.
They're very bright.
He does mention at one point that people won't come in because of those tats, and I'm like,
I find that hard to believe in New York.
Hey, I'm walking here. The priest's got no tattoos.
I was like, if you ever want to convince Hong Kong people not to emigrate to New York, this is the movie for you.
Oh, okay.
Like, what the fuck?
But how fake did like the New York street look?
Yeah, I know, right? They're probably barely in New York. Most of it's like set.
Do we know where it was shot? We don't.
Nah. I'm gathering that's a side lot. The church looks so fake.
Because they didn't spend much time in New York at all, really.
The church is like next to housing also, isn't it? It's kind of strange.
Yeah.
It probably was a house.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was just interior shots and, a couple of weird things that they mocked up.
Like, here's the city skyline with the twin towers and all that shit in the background. We're in New York and we fly back to Hong Kong for the meat of the film.
Yeah. But Dean Sheck made the fatal mistake of actually telling his second command where he was. He's like, I made it, man. It's all cool here. Thanks. And his like 2IC was just like, oh, what's your address, bro?
We do have to mention too that his daughter got whacked too.
Peggy. Yeah. Regina.
Gets whacked because she's like, I don't know where my dad is. And he's, oh, really? Okay, you're out.
You know why? She was wearing a white dress.
Yeah, actually, that was
true.
That was very funny. That's a trope of John Woo. And then as soon as we realized that, it was like, ah, anybody dressed in white?
Also, I was like, wow, two females in one movie. Sorry, you've reached your quota.
Blammo. Yeah.
I actually think that that's how I can explain everyone getting shot 15 times living. Bullets don't like black.
They bounce off a black suit.
Power at black.
Yeah. Can't tell if they're shot.
If you're wearing white, it's like getting hit with a shotgun.
Hey, look, they only killed one. One of them gets to live, Rachel.
Yeah.
That's progress.
And then by the end of the movie, then there's two girls because there's a baby girl.
There's a baby girl.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Also, the staff at the restaurant, they sort of do a little photo at the end.
Oh, yeah.
They only fridged one girl. The other ones have agency.
I always wondered what those kids are up to.
Those kids?
the restaurant kids.
That ragtag group of...
Well, nope. Why do they like Ken so much and all that business? But
if you actually look closely, they're the ones that go to the Ninja Turtles movie.
You got any cigarettes?
You know, I was just going to say, I bet they're skateboarding at some skate park.
I'm surprised that Sui didn't like sell out and just do Better Tomorrow in America and just go with it like he did on his other movies.
And just steal it. I came up with this. Chow Yun Fat, replacement killers. But then we get you knew this was coming because his 2IC now knows. So they send all these hitmen after Dean Sheck in the States.
Yeah, take your hand off the thing.
But it's like random. So they couldn't send Asian hitmen to America. So they got these actual like
bunch of mustachios,
mustachio guys who were just at this soup kitchen at the.
I gathered they were trying to make some sort of link because the 2IC guy is into counterfeiting and he hooks up with some American guy that looks kind of
Italian. The Grand Wizard,
yeah,
the expertise yes. or something.
That's yeah. right, and he goes, "We've got this handled for the New York guy."
Oh, that's right.
And what movie did you say he was in? Armor of God.
Armor of God. He's the Grand Wizard from Armor of God. Looks like Bela Lugosi. And these hitmen were just, they're not worth the money that you, well, actually, you probably paid with counterfeit money, so that's probably yeah, why. But these guys were shit. They're just in a soup kitchen. They pull out, like, there's maybe three of them. They pull out some guns, and they just miss everybody. Well, actually, no, they hit people, but not the person they're supposed to hit, which is Dean Sheck. And then Dean Sheck, you know, is a good guy because he's trying to save a little kid. But he couldn't save her because it's a John Woo film, and death is required.
And it drove him insane.
Well, so the little girl was shot and presumably killed, and he's carrying her. And then his buddy, his priest buddy, was also trying to help, and he also gets shot and terribly killed. And before he could get shot and terribly killed, the police arrived. And
it was like funky cops showed up.
Yeah, these funky.
I thought what
is the Keystone cops rock up.
Worst uniforms.
One guy had like three buttons undone, and he was just like waving his arms as he ran. It was
It's like they went to the Halloween shop for like some cop uniforms.
Do you guys want to do a retake of that? Nah, good enough. Next.
It's like they told him this will be in slow motion. Oh, slow motion. And then the next shot is of Dean Sheck committed to a mental institute.
Not just committed, straight jacket, tied down. Jesus. And they're talking about electroshock therapy?
Yeah.
Methinks these are some of the cuts from John Woo's actual script.
What the hell? And they're force feeding this guy, like, porridge? Oats?
That's not how you make porridge.
Yeah. I hope they cooled it down first because that shit's hot.
That's why he's trying to fight.
Yes, get off it. Please add sugar and cinnamon. But then they just tied him the fuck down on that bed. And for whatever reason, Ken is there. Charlie Fat is there.
They walk. This is great. They tie him down the bed. They walk out and they just leave the door open, as you do in most mental asylums.
Yeah, that's right.
My favorite part of this was Chow comes in, has a chat. And then they're getting in the car. There's no explanation of how he gets mad.
It's like, I got this, guys.
How do they even know each other?
Well, I gather that was the thing because Lung and Mark were friends. So I gather that Ken
they knew each other. Okay,
friends back in the day.
Okay,
but again, never explained.
I guess that's the 40 minutes worth you never will see.
All the cuts.
Yeah. Okay.
It's 40 minutes of Dean Sheck being crazy,
a vegetable essentially.
Like, there was also this point, and Sam mentioned it, and on another review thing I was doing, they were pointing it out as a goof, where Tai Lung had called Ken to tell him about the daughter Peg dying or getting whacked, to tell Lung that that had happened, because he knew that he was there, etc. But Chow never actually answered the phone, so he never actually gets told that the daughter's dead, but in a scene in like 2 minutes' time, he's then telling them, but your daughter's dead. But there's no explanation that he ever got that message to actually know, to then tell him to know.
Really let him down gently, didn't he?
Yeah.
I got something to tell you, bro. None of that shit. Just like, oh, by the way, fuck you. Snap out of it.
This movie is just like distilled Chinese tough love, right? Like, you're going to get better because if you don't, I'm going to beat the fucking shit out of you.
Or the food.
Yeah.
He makes this 5-star breakfast for him. And
looks pretty good.
It does. I was quite
steak, bacon, eggs, sausages. What else?
Chicken?
Was there?
Chicken?
There was chicken. You're going to eat this.
And he just sort of looks at it and has nothing to do. And he absolutely, Chow in fact loses his mind. And then just goes to his fridge. This is all shit. Starts ripping stuff. He literally says that. This is all shit. Throwing like eggs, chicken, meat, oranges all over the floor. And then, Lung is sitting there and he's like, crawls to a bit of raw meat and he tries to put it in his mouth and he's like, no. Picks up an orange and he's sort of looking at it and Chow Yun Fat sees him and they have this tense moment where it's like bonding over a piece of fruit and he's trying to get to this fruit and Chow Yun Fat like, okay, I'll peel it. Eat this. And he starts eating it, and that's how he gets on the road to
it's
recovery.
Like, it's like Dean Check figured out to open the Matrix or something like that.
That's why I was wondering why Dean Check hadn't got his acting award yet. Great. But we're already, like, you know, early into the movie, surprisingly.
Yes. I think Chow Yun-Fat was overreacting a little bit.
There's a bit where he throws something on the floor and it hits a camera.
Yeah.
The bottom of the camera is all messed up. It's great.
Yeah, I don't know.
How many times do you reckon they refilmed that? Just the one take, or do you reckon they did it a couple of times?
Well, all the food.
Mm. I think one. The food. Looks like one take.
No, it's one take.
It would have been one take. There's a bit where he nearly slips over, so I reckon if he had a slip.
I think you're right, yeah.
But in this film, they probably would have kept it in.
Look, this film contains a scene that I'm going to call the most aggressive feeding somebody a drink I've ever seen. Of Chow trying to, like, pour a glass of milk down Dean Sheck's throat. And just Dean Sheck not opening his mouth and Chow just continuing to pour it down his fucking throat anyway. There you go, Dean. There you go. And it's just fucking dribbling down his... Oh, I couldn't even watch it. I'm lactose intolerant, so that was even worse.
It's like you had a drunk mate and you're trying to give him a power raise. Like, come on, man. Just drink this.
Get a straw, Chow.
It was soy milk.
That's why he didn't drink it. Man boobs. Boobies.
Almond milk's gross.
But he doesn't recover yet. He eats the orange. He's not quite there. But Chow is impressed that at least he's eating.
He also rips up the photo of his daughter.
Oh. He's scrambling around on the floor because he's lost the photo of his daughter, which is basically like 2 inches from
his... No, we skipped a bit.
Yeah.
It's at this point that the gangster guys decide to blow up Chow's restaurant, and they leave a suitcase in the middle of next to a table in the middle of the restaurant, and the gangster kids try and shoo everyone out, and then there's a scene of like the customers running right next to the bomb as they exit the restaurant. It's just a stupid scene, and then the explosion, which has got some absolutely terrible special effects that they've just like added, like superimposed the explosion effect on it.
I was getting everybody ice cream.
And there's a weird greaser guy outside the door, and he gets hit by the front door of the restaurant.
I thought it was the guy that planted the bomb. No, I thought he needs to walk away.
Just a random New York,
greaser, like he's in the 1950s or some shit.
I felt the explosion didn't come out very fast. So they just added an extra panel on the outside, so the panel would fall out.
This one thing this movie does very inconsistently is cars are different colors, cars are from different eras. He starts off driving this must be 57 Chevy Cadillac or something like that, and then the next thing he's driving a 72 Bel Air. It's like, what? Make up your mind, movies.
He's a restaurateur. He can afford lots of different cars.
He's saying Fonz from Happy Days is out the front. They're going, hey, and the thing blew up. Yeah.
He's like, hey, hey.
And the funny thing is, when they go and follow the kids because they go to Chow's house, and they follow them to the house, and then they start shooting up the house, and then Chow takes a couple of them out as they're
because he invading. Went down before he did that. He went to this neighbor and gave him, and he got a shotgun and a couple of handguns.
No, that's after. So he had some guns anyway, and he took the dudes out, and then they go and escape in the car. And that was where we were saying the car was a different color. He pulled up in a blue car and he leaves in the beige car. But later in the movie, the beige car is the exact same car in Hong Kong that was in America.
He shipped it over. Because they have to go from his house, which has now been shot up to shit, to some apartment. And that's when he gets the shotgun and a bunch of different ammunition. Well, he's got like a Spetsnaz shotgun. He's got like... two handguns, at least two.
He's basically loading up to take on these crazy crims.
Because one of the things, like, he there's a scene where a guy comes through the door and he just looks and says, "Fuck you."
That's how the shootout starts.
It's one of the greatest scenes of it's way to start a shotgun fight. And so he goes back and forth, just taking people out with his shotgun.
This is the best. After he says "fuck you," and he shoots that guy through the window, and the shotgun is just really impactful because the guy just gets like ratcheted back and shit. They show like a bad guy opening the door at just to see Chow standing there with a shotgun, and then he unloads. Oh, it's so good.
This is the point in the movie where you can see Choi Hark's being pushed to the side, and John Woo says, "I'll just take over for the night shift."
It's got to be John Woo, right? This has got to be Woo.
Let me take the reins on this last half of the film, mate.
I have to say, like, throughout all of the gun shots and so forth with the shotgun, every single guy that gets hit at close range with a shotgun is ratcheted back. Like, there's at least six of them throughout the different gunfights in it.
And much like
every time.
Much like the first movie, as gross as this might be to some people, like the blood splatter of the walls and stuff is cool. It looks...
Yeah, it's graphic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is where Chow gets his, you know, dual hand pistols. He's like, pa-pow, pa-pow, pow, because he's run out of bullets.
This is where Ken turns into Mark, maybe.
Ken turns it. They leave there. He turns into Mark when they're at a an alleyway or something, right? Because they drive in a car, and Ken's been trying to get Dean Check to kind of
snap
out of it, and that's
very gently.
Yeah, not at all. And then I think Ken gets shot in the hand, and that's when this car is coming towards them. And Ken is there bleeding because he's got shot in the arm, which if it was the first film, he'd be a cripple. Remember? Mark got shot in the leg, cripple. And then Dean Scheck kind of sees Ken, sees the gun, and realizes, I guess he snaps out of him. He's just like, Ken! And then Ken's smiling and we know that it's all good. So then Shecky, who traditionally is not an action hero, really, he kind of hobbles over to the gun and then stands up and he delivers his payload onto this car.
Justice has been delivered.
Yeah. And I don't know if this was Shecky. I highly doubt it. As the car's coming towards him. Yeah, you're shaking your head, Rick. It wasn't him. He's shooting the guys. He kills the guys in the car. But the car is still barreling towards him. And just before it hits him, the stuntman does like a diving somersault over the bonnet of the car and to the side.
Dude's got grey hair. How can you possibly be rolling?
Fucking great stunt. Really
it's not like
great.
He jumped out of the way. He jumped over. There's not a lot of room for error there.
No, Jesus. Yeah, clip his... See how close he was? He was super close to that car. Sammo would be like, no, I want you to hit the car.
He had this cardboard on the car. Got a cushion. Yeah,
I think he did walk through the sparks, though. So I was hoping, I was hoping his pants were like well insulated.
I hope that was actually set up like to be non-dangerous.
There's no like, what do you call it? Like stunt sparks.
Yeah. Right, is there a spark supposed to be there?
They go with an angle grinder backstage.
Remember that movie you watched with the guy from Mortal Kombat?
Liu Kang. Not Liu Kang. Robin Shu.
Robin Shu, sorry. And there's the fans.
In the Line of Duty. That was in the Line of Duty.
Yeah, like the fans in the background. And it's like, the sparks, that would be the perfect, like...
Tiger Cage?
Yes. Tiger Cage 2. And those fans plus those sparks make the ultimate, like, early 90s. Yeah.
That was a very American-looking thing.
Yeah.
America.
So then we have Dean Shecky back on the scene as Lung again. And Ken's happy. And then they decide to go back to Hong Kong.
We're back in Hong Kong all of a sudden as well without any explanation how that happened.
And without any injuries either. No. They all miraculously recovered here.
It's almost like a time jump because like Kit, who got beat up and stuff, was kind of healed. We forgot to do that bit too.
Oh, the mobster.
Yeah.
Because the mobs think that... Kit wants to get in with the bad guys with the 2IC. And what's his name? Tai Lung also wants to get in with the 2IC because he doesn't want Kit to be in there because he knows Kit's got his whole life ahead of him. And Tai Lung obviously is a gangster and he's like, I've done bad. I need a penance or whatever.
I wouldn't cry. Don't cry. Nobody cries.
And also the greatest character in this film, Uncle Ken, who is the taxi driver boss, best boss ever. He's also kind of helping Tai Lung, you know, do what he needs to do. But then Kit... He gets in too deep and 2IC says to Tai Lung, look, we want you to come on board, but you got to prove your worth to us. Kill this kid. We think he's a cop. And then Tai Lung is like, okay. And he sees that it's his younger brother. He's like, oh, drama.
Do you find it unbelievable that gangsters wouldn't know that they're related?
Highly unbelievable. It's
like they're quite high profile. He's a high profile gangster.
Yes.
So in the past. So.
And plus all of the events of the first movie. Like, come on. That would have made some kind of news, right? But then...
I'll bet we explain around it. We didn't really investigate him.
Yeah, he's probably right.
It's terrible.
It's probably fine.
So then they have this very tense... This is the thing, like, the dramatic moments take forever. They're just, like, lots of really long stares at each other and...
Three shots of the same face, same person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They're just, like, oh... They're looking at each other and then eventually Tai Lung has to do something because if he doesn't do something, Kit is really going to cop it and he's going to die. And then Tai Lung shoots him in the shoulder and Kit looks at him, he's just like,
"You better do it again."
"They won't buy it."
Yeah. And Tai Long's just like, "Nah, bro." But then he does. He shoots him in the appendix, I guess.
Don't need that. The side. The funny thing is, afterwards, they all drive off. And they're all going, all these gang members are all going in one direction. He turns the opposite direction, stops. They all drive away and he turns back and goes back. And no one says anything.
Well, they're all driven off now. They've gone to get, I don't know, like late night chili mussels or something.
They're going to Circle K and they're going to get a bowl of instant noodles or something.
That's right, yeah. Hey, where's Tai Long? I don't know. Have these noodles. Chili mussels. Conkers.
Then you should go 3 weeks later and then they're in Hong Kong or something like that.
So then
that they all the main characters come together in the cemetery.
They join together, yeah. They have a little few moments, I guess, of everyone being surprised at Ken looking exactly like Mark, I guess. But I think that's about it. They don't really make
Do you know how they sense. Explain away that Kit is okay? The doctor's like, "Well, fortunately, the bullet came out the other side, so he's healthy as a..."
Yeah.
What?
Lucky it didn't stay in there.
Is that worse?
He's not injured. He hasn't got, like, nerve damage or anything. He's fine.
Look, the bullet didn't kill him, but the tuberculosis will.
Yeah. This is the 80s. This isn't, like, microsurgery.
I was like, "Don't worry. He's still as pretty as ever. It's okay."
He's very handsome.
You hit him in the face. He's fine. He's still got a career.
There's a funny bit when they're in the cemetery, and I can't remember who it is, but he looks at Chow and he goes, "Mark?" And he goes, "Akin!"
Yeah.
He says it twice.
What's in his mouth? Is it a matchstick at this time again?
Yeah. That's his trademark, right? His matchstick in his mouth. I was actually kind of hoping that they would pay respect to that at the end or something and he would light it to explode something. No.
He's too busy sucking fucking lighter flames in his mouth.
Yeah, what the fuck is up with that, Chow?
That's a pretty cool trick, though.
It's a very cool trick. So Chow Yun-Fat essentially lights a lighter and then sucks the flame into his mouth for about, what, like 3 seconds?
I reckon it's like getting a high off the butane.
Yeah. It's a cool trick, but also why? Why would you want to try that for funsies to learn that you could do that? Well, I guess you were talking about burning a smiley face into your hands, but...
I never did that.
With a cigarette lighter. Yeah.
Yeah, you did.
I'm not
crazy. I put a cigarette out in my hand to prove how cool I was and then screamed like a little bitch because it hurt and took ages to heal.
Did everyone think you were cool?
No, everyone thought I was a little bitch. So, kids at home, if you think it's cool to put out a cigarette anywhere on your body, it's not. Don't do it.
Kids are just doing vapes now anyway, so. Yeah. Oh, it's illegal, so sorry. No, you can't.
You can vape. You can't vape nicotine, right? You can vape.
No. Single-use vapes are gone.
Oh, what?
Could have fooled me.
Soon.
Yeah, okay. Man, that was a fad that I didn't even know existed that went and disappeared.
You better be careful because your kids would come up soon.
My kids would never vape, Christian. Mate. Never vape.
Mate.
If I caught
Who
my
are
kids,
you fooling?
If I caught my kids vaping, I'd make them sit down and watch A Better Tomorrow too. I say, "Look, look what they died to give you and you want to throw it away with vapes? Leslie Cheung died for you."
I thought you were going to say you'd make them sit down and watch like...
Spoiler alert.
Blue Spring or something.
Oh, come on.
I was trying to think. Of a different
movie. The tuberculosis will get you. It'll get you.
Consumption.
All right, sorry. Initial D, maybe.
Initial D, yeah.
Nothing wrong with Initial D.
Tofu is boring.
It's just a tofu delivery film.
Tofu.
I don't know how you took Initial D and turned it into family violence. I really don't.
So this is a gathering of our heroes now, right?
Moving on.
Bringing it back. So, we've got Leslie Cheung, Kit. We've got Chow Yun-Fat, Ken. You've got Tai Long's... Tai Long.
His name. Is it Ho?
Huh?
Is his name Ho?
Ho. You've got Uncle Ken, greatest boss in the world, and Dean Shex. Oh, I already said Dean Shex Long. Is there anyone else? It's just the four of them, right?
Pretty much.
Because Kit was not going to join them, but then it was Chow Yun-Fat who's like...
Because everybody else is a bad guy, right?
He did the thumbs up. He did and everyone knew up. That meant you were in.
That iconic thumbs up.
He's a cool dude to hang around, I reckon, Chow Yun-Fat. You'd be like, yeah, he's a cool dude. Bit crazy, but cool dude.
He's got your back.
Yeah, just, that's right.
Yeah, just crazy.
He's that friend that you're like, hey, man, let's do this. And he just takes it too far. But he's so charismatic, just like, all right.
Sounds like Nathan.
What?
I think Nathan would be up with being compared with Chow.
Chow Yun-Fat.
It's a compliment. I'm not trying to be mean.
Thumbs up, Nathan.
Get well soon.
Get well. So they hatch this plan that they're going to go because Dean Schenck knows, or he believes that they're running the counterfeiting operation out of his docks. So they plan this sting, I guess this raid, where they gear up, they get all of this, like these weaponry and whatever, and they're going to go and take on these docks and shut it all down.
And Dean Schenck is acting really hard, like, I'm going to burn this fucking place to the ground. This is my docks. You know, he's
what about his phone call?
Oh, I'm back.
You know, this was a point when I was kind of building up with disappointment because we missed a warehouse shootout. And I was like, damn it, there's no warehouse shootout.
Well, we saw the warehouse and we were like, it's got to be, right?
Kablamo,
it's
be, come it's on.
Kablamo. And what warehouse is it?
Huh? It's the no smoking warehouse.
It's
the fireworks factory.
Huh?
Chekhov's warehouse.
Chekhov's warehouse. They didn't set up the warehouse at the beginning.
It's Shecky's warehouse. Come on.
It's Shecky's warehouse and it had no smoking signs on the outside. And as soon as we saw the warehouse, like we've been conditioned in every Hong Kong film.
Yeah, be like, come on.
Showdown. Warehouse. Yep. Apple boxes. Someone's going to fall in them. And unfortunately, Leslie Cheung's character doesn't go here because he was told by his brother that his wife is having a baby and is going to give birth. And then he says, you should go to the hospital. And that's when Chow does the thumbs up. He's like, go for it, bro.
Just to go back a time, we should mention that there's a little tension between Kit and his wife because he's undercover and he's like, I can't tell you what I'm doing. And she's like, you're cheating on me. And there's a bit of back and forth from that. But by the time she's having the baby, it seems to be all resolved.
And they also made a point of him looking up at the sky and seeing a shooting star.
He says it's a bad omen.
And he said it twice. He sees two of them throughout the movie and thinks that's a bad omen.
Because the last time he saw it, like, Chow Yun-fat's character died.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, that's a bad omen.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, what's also a bad omen is that Kit's wearing white.
This is true.
It's a very bad omen. So the other three guys are all wearing black and he's wearing white.
So Kit in his we think he's gone down to the to go and see his wife, but what we find out a little bit later after the shootout begins is he's actually snuck back in and found like the basement or something like that.
The 2IC's house, he's gone, I think.
Underneath it there's a bunker or a basement or whatever you want to call it, and that's where they're running the counterfeiting operation out of. And that's when there's this really cool scene, this like Tiger Cage without the sparks. The fans, everything. Behind him is what's the assassin?
The assassin is a guy called Long Ming Yun, and he is the silent, stoic glasses guy. And I believe his character is named, give me a second, it just says Chong. So he is, he's in this movie just silent and stoic for the whole film, and he cuts an imposing figure, but it could have been Dick Way.
Yeah, it could have been Dick Way. Imagine if they made a sequel and he's got a twin brother called Cheech.
Funny.
Thanks, Scott.
I got the reference.
I was thinking it was more of like a single screaming name, like
Ja. But this is an interesting scene because they both come out and they're both bleeding. They don't show it.
Well, it's like a Western standoff with the assassin coming into the room and looking directly at Leslie Cheung, but Leslie Cheung's actually facing the other way, so they're not actually facing off. And Leslie Cheung can sense that someone's out there. So then they build this tension of like, what the shit's going to happen.
Big long shot and this giant face in the screen.
Yeah. And then at the very last minute, you see Leslie Cheung turn around to shoot and they both get a shot off. And that's what you're saying, Scott. They walk away and they're both bleeding.
And he's kind of a hard target.
Are you saying they both were hit with the double impact?
They almost got a bullet in the head.
They had a face-off.
Yeah. I'm not continuing this.
I guess you could say one of them is a Top Gun.
So Leslie Cheung runs away.
I say so this is important because they're doing the show not tell aspect of it. So you don't actually know who's been shot or what. Like, what's been shot.
The
what's been
thing
shot.
Of it, though, is like Chong's by the door. So he shot him and he was by the closed-in window. And yet,
nothing.
He's able to get away.
But they.
He's like, top job. Let's go.
I think they and this is good filmmaking. They establish the mortality of Kit's character. A couple of things. One, they have the shooting star, which they then play again as he's internalizing what's going to happen next. It's all in slow motion. Two, he's wearing white, so you know he's going to get shot. And three, it's like this lingering, like they set up Kit having the, you know, like how whenever you see a war film, they're just like, ah, my girl at home.
And in the hallway that they're doing, it's got the light shining through the windows in like creating like the ambiance and the scenery that you go, John's going to do the shooting now.
Yeah. And he gets terribly shot and then he runs away. And for whatever reason, Ken seems to have found his way there in a car. And Leslie Cheung kind of climbs over a fence and there's blood everywhere.
And with these podcasts, we try not to go like line for line, note for note. But I think with this film, it's quite complicated in parts and dense. So it's hard not to talk about these things.
I was going to say that bloodstain is very important to this story. Or well, not very important, but it's very symbolic, which is weird. He rolls over the wall and leaves a giant bloodstain.
Well, I guess it's because everyone is bleeding all the time in this film from multiple gun wounds. So they had to make this one seem
but
a bit different.
But they come back to the bloodstain later. It's just so...
And then he gets in the car and he's trying to get him to the hospital and he's like, I'm not going to make it.
This is heart-wrenching.
It is a pretty good scene. He goes, I've got to get to a phone. I've got to ring the missus because the missus is having baby. And so he gets to the phone and Chow Yun-Fat rings it and says, oh, room 704, please, blah, blah, blah. And hang on a minute. Gives it to the guy. He goes, oh, what's his girlfriend's name? Ho?
Peggy.
Jackie, wasn't it?
Jackie?
Oh, yeah, put Jackie on the phone, yeah.
Put Jackie on the phone. And he goes, Jackie, what's the name of that Pokemon? Who's that Pokemon?
Hitmonchan.
Is it a boy or a girl? She goes, I'm not really sure yet.
It is a really like very simple, touching conversation, which she obviously doesn't know that he's injured and he is speaking through fucking bubbling blood coming out of his mouth and Chow Yun-Fat is acting his fucking heart out looking at this guy talking and I said, cry, Chow, cry. And he did. He got a tear come out and it's a pretty good performance. And they're having this very simple conversation. Oh, you know, it's great. I just want to hear her cry and all this. And you know, I'm making fun of it out loud, but inside I'm just like, oh, my God.
Now, wouldn't it be more realistic? I know she's overcome with emotion and the new baby and all that. Wouldn't you say, where the fuck were you?
Yeah, that's actually, yeah, legit. And she'd also be like whacked out on whatever drugs they've given her as well. But it was very heart-wrenching and very sad. And then he does end up naming the daughter just before he passes away. And then a very lovely, well, I shouldn't say lovely, but a very evocative shot of them kind of like slowly zooming out or moving away.
The most random phone box in New York.
Yeah.
Hong Kong.
In Hong Kong. As Leslie Cheung kind of spills out and Chow is like, oh.
Good shot.
Great shot, yeah.
And like there's a really weird scene, bit of dialogue. He goes, and the baby was 6 pounds, 3 ounces or something like that. And Chow goes, oh yeah, me and Mark, we didn't weigh that together. So you know, it's like, is that a fat joke? Is it like
it's just what do you call it? Just banter.
Fortuitous sign, right?
Is it or just banter?
No, I thought it was fortuitous because it's like, oh, you've got a healthy healthy fat baby.
It's up to this point that it starts doing weird editing again, where it has like almost frozen frame bits and we're going, oh, we're going to end the movie here. And then we sort of move on a little bit and then it does another one and then it sort of keys what we're looking at, like not the funeral but the wake kind of thing, and then they're sort of getting armed to the teeth and then we know, okay, we're going to go have a final shootout.
We're going to the fireworks factory.
See, this is interesting because the way that it's now set up is you don't know and you suspect that these characters aren't going to make it because Ken's obviously lost his brother. He's really got nothing to live for. His restaurant's dead. You got Dean Shek, whose daughter was killed. He's really got nothing to live for anymore. You've got Tai Long. Tai Long's brother's just been killed, you know, and his wife is now having a baby by herself. So Tai Long doesn't really have... The only person who has something to live for is Uncle Ken.
Taxi man.
Yeah, taxi boss, the best boss ever, who just walks around carrying a pack of guns and swords for everyone and just happens to be there.
We have to mention badass moment. Chow puts on the jacket.
Duster jacket.
The trench coat.
The jacket his brother died in.
Died in with all bullet holes, complete with. And while he's getting armed up, he... hooks on grenades into the bullet holes.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Inside of the jacket.
I just love how when they're at the wake, they haven't even finished the wake yet, and someone just throws a shotgun The Chow Young Fat, while they're in the middle of this wake, you're like, yeah, the nominee portrait, sign of the cross, here's a shotgun. Okay, let's go.
That's definitely Chow's sign anyway. Shotgun. Every movie he has a freaking shotgun.
And it was shot in a basement because there's like a coat rack like right next to where the urn is. But this is it. This is the final showdown.
And this is amazing. It's the best part of the film.
It's very much so. Because the bad guys are just kind of there, all thinking, ah, we got away with it. We're just going to make our counterfeit money. They go past the blood splatter, Leslie Cheung's blood splatter. And I honestly thought that Chow Yun-fat was going to like wipe it and then lick it or something.
There's a great scene paint here where they all three of them jump over the fence at the same time. And it's like,
it's a bit wacky.
It looks awkward. Like they really had to try very hard. Like
yeah.
Dean Sheck is like going,
because it is awkward because like I said, I think he's trying to squeeze them all into frame. So they're all jumping over this fence, like shoulder to looks shoulder.
Like a meter unless or something.
On a trampoline. They had to be on a trampoline or something behind him.
Yeah.
Know? Oh, it's definitely multiple shots.
But they made it all over. Shecky lands very uncomfortably. But they all look okay. They throw their bags over first, which is probably smart.
Uncle Ken is relegated to support at this point, right?
Uncle Ken is the best character in this film. He shows up when you need him and he gives you encouraging words of wisdom whenever you're feeling down or shot.
And a katana. Yeah.
And a katana.
He's like a video game character when you're low on health and he comes running in to top you up.
Here you go. Pretty much.
He's like that little potion goblin from like Golden Axe.
He just shows up. Or Streets of Rage where you push the button and the cop comes and shoots the bazooka.
Oh, you know, and even when Tai Long is saying to him, he's just like, oh, you know, I want to do this again. And then he goes, that's against my principles. But principles can change. Best boss ever. And that's when the fireworks begin. And holy shit, what fireworks.
It's funny. One of the things I noticed about this is all the bad guys run in a line.
Easier for them to get mowed down.
Or in a hallway.
Yeah, they just run and like there's no strategy to this. It's just like run at them. Because when they jump over the fence, there's like 50 people outside. They all get mowed down and then they go inside and they're just hallway running now. There's no snipers on the second floor. There's nothing. It's just like walk around, bang, bang, bang. Someone's got an Uzi, someone's got a shotgun, someone's got handguns, and it's just, whichever direction you go, there's just bodies flying everywhere.
I love the opening, though, with Chow walking slow motion, revealing himself to a field full of bad guys, opens up with a couple of shotgun rounds, and then just fucking Uzis down everybody else. I mean, scene stealer. Like, this is Dean Sheck's film, and yet who gets the best shots? Chow Yun-fat.
So there's a lot of blood, a lot of killing here, and they fake you out of, oops, we got the boss here, but no, you don't.
Yeah, that's because they spend like maybe 5-10 seconds of the three of them unloading on a guy in a white suit. And I swear to God, if you watch it again, watch Tai Long just bopping, like doing hip thrusts as he's shooting.
It's disgusting.
You got to watch it. It's true. I was watching it going, what the fuck is bopping. He doing?
There's another scene where Chow alone makes it down to the counterfeiting room and sets up grenades in various points where he's balancing on the scales.
He's just having fun.
For just no reason other than it looks fun.
And then just waits outside the door.
I was like, that's not far enough.
No. And it pushes him with the door like across the room.
This is where you get that funny reaction. He's like, ooh.
And he does say, he's just like, ooh, that was actually bigger than I thought.
That's not acting. That's reaction.
That's
of the best kind of acting.
And though, so they kill probably like dozens of people at this stage, but because it's heroic bloodshed, they also get shot up as well randomly. And then whenever in the tight bind, guess who's there to help them out? Uncle Ken. You know, like Chow's down there with no guns getting shot at. Uncle Ken's out the window. Here, have a gun.
Throw some guns through here.
Yeah. You need no guns? Here, have a katana. Fucking great.
I wasn't expecting that. That was like, oh, shit.
The katana.
And then there's this like great, almost westernish scene where Chow and the assassin face off. And they're both running each other, shooting each other. They're all shot up, leaning against a wall. It's about the length of a doorway. And they go for it again. And then Chow's out. But the assassin has another gun. Literally throws him another gun along the ground. They both have a gun underneath their foot and then they just go for it.
Good guy, assassin. He wants to die honorable death. And let's not forget the guy with the axe too.
Yeah. Henchman number one.
Yeah.
has the worst or the best kind of like bad guy snarl.
Oh, he's got a good snarl.
He's the guy that looks like a gangster.
Well, he's the one that's like, if he sees the other bad guys running the wrong way, he's like, "You trying to get out?" And then just kills him.
Mm-hmm. He's crazy. True,
yeah. He's doing his job well. He should get Employee of the Month. Right? Because he's the one holding up the organization. Unfortunately, he doesn't win against an axe fight with Tai Long, because Tai Long has Uncle Ken.
And a sword.
And a sword.
And a katana, yeah.
And he kills the fuck out of him.
Then we have the final shot where it looks like bad guy's going to escape. Was it Lo? Was
Lung.
Lung? No, Lung? No,
no. No, the two I see. I forget his name.
Ko. It was Ko. Ko's the
fucking quick draw. Ko's a quick draw.
Yeah. So Lung's outside on his knees and he sort of gets up to turn to shoot at him, but Ko pulls out a gun and shoots Lung first, who falls to the ground, collapses on the ground. And then Chow and Tai Lung come out behind. And I think Chow shoots.
Well, because Ko actually manages to shoot Lung and Tai Lung at the same time. Quick draw. Yes. And then it's Chow that comes out and he
shoots him in the knee.
Yeah.
And then Ko falls to his knees.
Right.
And to his face, right in front of
Lung,
who has the gun and can only just hold the gun up. Yeah. He falls directly in the line of sight. And he fires and gets him in the head.
And that was Ko.
And then they say to Uncle Ken, "Get out of here." And then the next scene is every cop in Hong Kong comes to this house. There's a room. There's three chairs. They're all sitting there bloody bruised and battered. All these bodies on the floor. And all the cops are pointing at them going like, "Okay, you're under arrest now." Like,
what happened here, guys?
Golly.
Yeah, we had a
got to complain from the neighbors. You got to keep the noise down.
Bullet fight.
I was expecting the bad guy to be trying to get into a helicopter or something like that.
Yeah. They couldn't afford a helicopter. Yeah. Is this a freeze frame? I can't remember.
Ends in a freeze frame.
It ends.
Yeah, okay.
Two in a row.
Yeah, it was very, actually reminded me of Reservoir Dogs. Everybody with their bullet wounds and whatnot. And that was A Better Tomorrow too. Great film. I think it was a pretty good film. Look, usually we talk about stunts, right? Because we watch stunt heavy films. I don't know that there were that many stunts. I'm sure there were.
The Dean Sheck flip. Leslie Cheung getting off the boat straight onto the jetty. That was
Stuntman broke his foot doing that jump.
Rolling down the stairs with an axe.
Oh yeah, that's right. And Chow Yun Fat actually rolls backwards down the stairs as he shoots with two guns. Yeah. So, yeah, actually, there were quite a few different stunts.
Yeah, compared to the first one.
The ratcheting, I think, needs to be a big, especially probably in all his films, but in this one, I think especially there needs to be a little bit more praise for all the ratchet jobs that are done.
Yeah, it's just really impressive on film, right? It was really, really cool. Was there anything, any stunts or anything in this film that you would like to do at home?
I'm not a stunt or anything, but I just want to... There's a line that Dean Sheck says. It's like, "Don't you know how hard it is to be a good person?" And it's like, oh, man, I feel that.
I need to get a small hose out of blood and then just hose down the entire set with it. So every time someone gets cut, he's like, it's like, and then the wall, and then so on and so forth. Because how on earth did they do that?
I love the pile of bodies. This is the pile of bodies there with the blood splatter everywhere.
We need blood splatter person. Rachel, where are you? Rachel,
it's like get a super circle.
go back to Bunnings and get some more.
More red paint.
I honestly, if I was to do anything with this movie, I would love to be able to get shot and just have it go through.
And you're safe.
You're fine. Yeah,
like, good. It's the Band-Aid. Let's go.
It went through.
Here's a day off. Go back to on Tuesday.
You know, not really something. I would like to have been on set with Ng Man Tat and like Dean Sheck and all of those guys and just be like one of those mooks who's just, you know what I mean? Just... hanging around and just watching these two guys be just really evil.
Checking off camera, like goofing off and stuff.
Yeah.
You think? I think they're method acting.
You reckon?
I reckon they're serious people. Well, then I'd be a dick and I'd just be like, serious acting.
Hey, Dean, do the wacky faces.
Really would.
But yeah, catching a shotgun would be fucking cool.
Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle?
Oh, thumbs up. No doubt.
I'm middle leaning up. The last half got me and there's some excellent shots. And the music towards the end gets very good. The first half, needlessly complicated, but I get it. It got there in the end. So I'm going to say thumbs leaning up.
Better or worse than the first one?
Ooh.
Two different things.
Yeah.
But you go first.
Better.
Yeah. Better. Thumbs up, thumbs down, better or worse?
I mean, thumbs up, but obviously this is completely different. Kettle fish compared to the first movie where you've got such a strong thematic themes strong themes going on, but whereas this is
strong adult theme.
Yeah. But this is more of just like a storyline for the sake of creating the action. And I don't know if those 40 minutes were added in, whether I could actually bear it.
Unless it was all
shit. Even if it's explanation.
Yeah.
I can see why you go like, no, just chop that 40 minutes out.
Like, the acting is incredible. Like, Dean Shek is amazing. Like, and Chow Yun-Fat is incredible. Like, very good performances.
But I don't feel that sense of tension between the brothers and stuff, of course, from the first movie, where you felt like really bad for them because they were just so conflicted.
Yeah, the story
now it's just like bang, bang.
It was like one's a cop, one's a gangster, right?
Yeah, it was a much tighter story in the first one. Mikey?
Yeah, thumbs up.
Yeah.
You've seen
the first one?
I've seen the first one.
Yeah.
I had seen this one before as well.
Yeah. Right.
And I have a feeling I have seen the third one.
Well, guess what we're doing next week?
Going to Vietnam.
I'm kind of like where Scott is. I haven't seen the first one. I thought Chow Yun-Fat stole the show in this one for me. I kind of like that craziness from him. Like, everyone seemed to be like serious acting, and he just looked like he was having a blast.
Do you want to see the first one after watching this one?
Not if he's dead serious. I don't think it.
He's not dead serious. Not. It's no. just. It's different.
I feel like the stakes are higher in the first one. There's a lot more to gain at the end, like we're saying, to get back what he deserved, what he earned, oined, rather.
Oined. Yeah, because he oined. Oined. It's, yeah, oined. He turned into like some New York. We're gonna play stickball. Because yeah, they kind of set up his tragedy, right? Of like, he was this high flying gangster guy, and then he's been brought down really low with his injury. Whereas I think the stories are a little bit more muddled, and that might be because of the editing,
or just the sake of having the sequel and not much to go by.
I just feel like this is like great, like just him being batshit, not batshit, but like that
unhinged.
Unhinged, yeah, like, you know. I think that suited this character group really well. I could actually believe him surviving most of his gunshots.
Yeah, most of his, yeah.
The 20th, well, they came out.
Yes, 21.
They came out, so he's fine.
Yeah, they went straight through. None of them were kept inside. But yes, A Better Tomorrow too. One of John Woo's most memorable films. Obviously, one of his better known ones.
If this was made now, it would be A Better Two, number two, Morrow.
A Better
right?
Two, yeah, that's right. Ironically, there is no better tomorrow for anybody in this film, really. They're all suffering and struggling. But hopefully by watching this, it makes your tomorrow better.
Hey.
Hey. Okay, thanks. Thanks, everybody. I'll be here all night. But look, you should go and watch this film yourselves, listeners, if you haven't seen it already. Highly recommend. You saw it here. Mostly thumbs up. Thumbs slanting up, at least. So watch it. Tell us what you think. Better Tomorrow too, John Woo. All right. And if you do want to tell us what you think, Asian Actioncast, Gmail, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, we're all over the place. Thank you for tuning in and listening. And thank you, Scott, Rachel, Mike, and Chris. Until next time.
Kapow!
Ciao.
Can I go, eat the fucking fried rice?